When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 98, the Brian Bellows, or former Jesse Puljujärvi edition of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger, and fresh off the IR, pulling himself off of the mat, Frank Saravalli. Frankie, how you doing, my friend?
I've had better weeks, to be honest. Tested positive for COVID on Monday. Today's Friday, so it's day four. I'm feeling okay today. The weird thing about COVID is you have these stretches where you feel fine, and then like 10 minutes later, it's punching you in the face again. So I'm kind of hoping that's not that moment. Yesterday was actually the roughest day so far. But I'm hoping I'm knocking on wood that I'm through the worst of it. I kind of had one day of the fever and aches and chills. And since then it's been like headache, fatigue, and like real, like significant congestion and some chest tightness. So, it hasn't been fun, but, my house is mayhem at the moment. My wife isn't feeling so well as well. And we have two little kids, so it's kind of been crazy here, but just trying to stay away.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Have you lost taste of smell?
I have. Yeah. I lost taste and smell actually 2 days ago. So actually I'm hoping that's a built-in weight loss plan.
Yeah. My buddy had it. And he was just like, you can't, it's hard to explain to anybody who has taste, how suddenly when you don't have taste and literally you can look at something and it's just like, well, this, like it tastes like nothing. It's hard to wrap my head around that until you've experienced it.
So I have a great example actually, and it's going to sound funny. I was just, you know, watching TV last night. I said, you know what? I'm going to have an ice cream sandwich. Okay. And I'm like, so I'm sitting there and I'm watching TV and not really paying attention. I can kind of feel like the texture in my mouth and I'm eating it. I'm like, this is the weirdest experience ever. I know there's like cold chunks of ice cream sandwich that I'm eating, but I have no idea what it tastes like. And I don't even know why I'm even eating this. Like, why am I having calories at the moment when I really don't need it? And then, by the way, you want to know the weirdest part about COVID is like when your friends and family find out that you have it, like everyone has some kind of ridiculous suggestion for you.
No way.
Like, okay. So like my one buddy's like, hey, I really, you know, when I had COVID, what really helped me was hot water with lemon. I go, okay, great. Then someone else is like, hey, try this black seed oil. Like, okay, sure. You know, someone was like, hey, why don't you get on your Peloton, sweat it out? I'm like, buddy, I don't even use my Peloton when I'm healthy. So not doing that. And then I, you know, everything that's popped up, I've sort of been willing to try some nebulizer breathing treatments. Like it's only weird if it doesn't work. Right. And then like someone else is like, hey, why don't you try Vicks vapor rub, you know, rub some on your chest. And then when you're done, take your socks off, rub some on your foot and then go to sleep, put your sock back on and go to sleep.
Yeah.
And so I go, now I look like I just jacked off an elephant. I'm covered in Vicks vapor rub. What do I do now? And now I'm supposed to go to sleep. Oh, okay, good. Like I'm telling you, everyone has some kind of suggestion on how to get through COVID.
Yeah, honestly, I have none, Frank, so I can't offer you any. But any of our listeners, feel free to at Frank Saravalli, your best COVID.
Like, seriously, it's unbelievable. But like, the truth is, there's no answer.
I wouldn't think so. Because everybody's like, different.
You just sit there and try and get through it as best you can.
No. Now, Frank, if you ever need a cold remedy, that I'm your man on that one, but because you know, I've had a few, I know how to get through them. One does involve.
What's your secret?
Well, my wife, when we were engaged, I was staying over at her house, and obviously because of my job, I can never have a sore throat, and so I'm pretty kind of. It's the only thing that I'm anal about, and That's the only thing, like, really. No, I'm pretty.
I find this hard to believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty laid back about most things, but that's okay. The one where if it happens, I'm like, okay, I'm on it. And so my number one thing is, of course, I gargle a ton, but I gargle with salt and cayenne pepper.
Okay.
And you start with a little cayenne pepper, and then you put in a little bit more. You don't want to burn your throat. And that's a big one. And I'll do it like, you know, I'll do a whole glass. So that's 5-6 mouthfuls, gargle, whatever. And I do that literally every hour for like a day. And usually that stops it. But if I have a cold, and my wife, so you got to remember, we're engaged. In the middle of the night, I get quiet. I go in because I'm having a coughing attack. So she comes in the kitchen. I have a t-shirt on because I put Vicks Vapor Rub on my chest, but then I put a t-shirt on because it keeps you sweating. And then I put it on my throat and I wear a bandana around my neck, right? And because I was anal about it, I put the old Vicks in the pot and you boil it. Right. You have a towel over your head so she walks into the kitchen like 3:30 in the morning and I'm standing there. Cause I like to sleep buck. So I only had the shirt on, the bandana. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I got a cold. Like I was so, she's like, and you talk like it was, this is a normal thing for a human being to do. And I was like, guess what? Woke up the next day, felt way better. She still laughs about it, but I'm like, hey, anytime you have a sore throat or a cold, that's what you do. It's money in the bank. It works every time.
Oh, that's a little more than I bargained for there with that. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, dude, you're jerking off an elephant. So, hey, come on.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like that's what I felt and looked like. So like, okay. COVID is a strange, strange beast. If anyone's been there, the headache that you get, like I had full on conversations yesterday. Like I had no idea what I was even talking about.
Yeah. That's what I've heard.
It's legit brain fog. Legit. Yeah. And so I'm sure at some point during this pod, I'll be like, hey, get it together.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk lots of hockey talk. First of all, I'm hearing that the NHL, or at least the Evander Kane camp, believes that the NHL might be close to some sort of decision here. What do you think?
I've been, as I mentioned, a little bit out of the loop this week. I think the ball has been in the NHL's court to sort of make a judgment on what's coming and to at least be fair to any team that would be potentially signing him, to give them at least some kind of heads up as to what may or may not be coming in terms of discipline. I think the Kane camp itself has been optimistic, if not potentially overly optimistic, about what they believe is happening. So I've viewed it, you know, and I mentioned this before, it's been reported a lot that it's up to the Kane camp to decide when they sign. I don't personally believe that to be the case. I don't think any team is signing him until they know that he's in the clear. So until that happens, then I think it's wait and see mode.
Yeah, I agree. I've actually spoke to a few teams who are exactly in a holding pattern. They don't want to sign a guy if all of a sudden you sign him and 4 days later, he's suspended for a significant amount of time. You mentioned the word optimistic, and that's what I keep hearing is they believe maybe no supplemental discipline is coming. So it'll be an interesting one. If he does become a free agent, you know, on the ice, he's a highly sought after commodity. Off of the ice, obviously there's some concern. So the teams will have to balance it out that way. When things go wrong, sometimes they go even like you wonder where rock bottom is. The Edmonton Oilers blew a 3-1 lead against the Ottawa Senators last week. And that was the 30th place Senators. First time all year that Edmonton had blown a lead when leading after 40. They lose 6-5. Then they have Florida last night at home. They outshoot Florida. I think it was 16-7 in the first period. Sergei Bobrovsky looked like a Vezina Trophy winner. He kept his team in the first. That's what you have good goaltending for. And then Florida got a power play. They score. They end up rolling up some late power play goals and destroy the Oilers 6-0. And so, of course, I wrote the article earlier this week, Frank, about, like, it's easy to say fire the coach. It's an easy thing to do. But it's who you're going to replace him with, what's going to happen. You could fire the coach, and you tweeted out a tweet last night regarding the Philadelphia Flyers, right? They fired their coach, Alain Vigneault, when they were winless in 9. Then they lost the next one. They went winless in 10, right, with Mike Yeo. And now here we are.
They actually went on a 7-game point streak after that.
Yeah. And then here we are. Now they're on their second 10. That was a great stat. Second 10-game winless streak of the season, and they've only played 40 games. So, you know, coaching doesn't always work. Vancouver.
It's only the third time ever in the salary cap era that a team's had 2-1 season, and it's never happened in the first half.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so like Vancouver, it's worked. Philly, it hasn't worked. We can go through some teams that work, some teams it doesn't. Ken
it's
Holland,
always going to be a mixed bag, I think.
Yes, 100%. There's no, you can hope, like obviously fans of the team that's struggling, they'll look at the Vancouver's and say, see, it works. And they never rather look about the Philadelphia's or the other teams. So Ken Holland and the Edmonton Oilers, is there a change coming before their Saturday game against the Flames?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, something has to give at some point. And as patient as Ken Holland has tried to be, whether it's a trade for a goalie or it's a coaching change and probably a significant one in the sense that it wouldn't just be Dave Tippett, I don't think, that you can't continue on like this. Like, you know, you mentioned rock bottom. I think if you're the Oilers, you have to hope that this is it. The last show I did on Monday before testing positive with Tyler, that was one of the subjects we talked about on the Daily Faceoff show, Oilers rock bottom. And I was sitting there and I was like, I don't know if they've hit it yet. And that's kind of really the scariest part. And we talked immediately after, you know, the loss to the Sens in Monday's pod about, well, they've got Florida next, good luck. And the fact that they looked as good as they did in the first period, and then it's just wheels fall off after that, can't happen. Like, you need more pushback. You need, by the way, you need a point from Connor McDavid, 3 straight games without a point. It's the third time that's happened in the last 4 years. So a rare occurrence, but nothing's working. So if you aren't convinced that there is a real difference maker on the goalie front that you can trade for, then I think you're at the point where, you know, just sitting here saying, oh, we'll get through this, isn't going to work.
Yeah. And that's why the coach, it wasn't his decision, but it's his problem, the goaltending. And with Mike Smith being injured this year, that's obviously played a significant role. And I think what their plan was, Mikko Koskinen is what he is. He's just not a starting goaltender. You know, Stuart Skinner, if he didn't have COVID this week, like you, Frank, I'm guessing he might've started. Would he have been better? I don't know. But when you watch the game last night, it's the coach. I don't care who the coach is. The Edmonton Oilers didn't give up a whole bunch early on, but Bobrovsky was unreal. And that's where you need a goalie every now and then when your team is just not ready or the other team is more prepared, that your goalie can keep you in games. And that's what good teams have. Good teams, it's not a surprise to me that good winning teams have a really good goalie who can steal a period every now and then, and it keeps your team in it. And sometimes that happens, you know, like Bobrovsky's got points in 9 straight games that he started. So he's obviously very good. He's got a save percentage hovering around 925. He's been excellent. And, you know, Ken Holland, when I was thinking about it last night, I'll go back and I said, everybody talk about, well, you know, he tried for Markstrom. Okay, but he didn't want to give Markstrom an extra year. However, this past summer, he gave Nugent Hopkins 8 years and Zach Hyman 7 years, right? The max they could get for either guy. And you're like, well, and Darnell Nurse got 8. So you're like, well, you wouldn't do it for a goalie, but you would do it for defensemen and forwards. That seems a little bit contradictory, does it not?
And I don't want to hear anything about I tried to get a goalie. It's like, yeah, I tried to lose weight last summer too. I mean, like, come on. Like, trying doesn't matter. It's the end results that matter. You know, you can try on Darcy Kemper. You can try on Tristan Jarry. You can try on Jacob Markstrom. Who cares? you need to get a goal. And I wanted to quibble with one thing that you said, you know, with Dave Tippett, the goaltending is not his choice. I don't buy that, actually. Dave Tippett is a big reason why Mike Smith is an Edmonton Oiler. A big, big reason. He that's been his guy almost his entire coaching career in the NHL.
Yeah, no, that's
Dallas fair. Stars, Arizona Coyotes, Edmonton Oilers. He doesn't end up there, I don't think, if Dave Tippett isn't the Oilers head coach.
Yeah, well, and Smith was, you got to remember, Smith was excellent for the Oilers last year. He's amazing.
And I'm not, but I'm just saying, you can't take the good part and not also get the bad part too.
Okay, that's fair. The Smith signing, though, I looked at it. I think, like, I don't think Smith was their first choice this offseason.
I know he wasn't their first
choice. Yeah, the day he signed on the 16th of July, they'd had 2 weeks. They'd been trying to sign other guys, right? So obviously they tried. And as you said, hey, trying's great, but if you don't get it, well, then you have to come back to it. Obviously, I know people say, well, he's 39. He had to get injured. I don't really buy that. I can look around the league. There's lots of older players that don't get injured, right? And there's lots of
younger
players.
He doesn't have a long injury history. It's more been fluky than anything else.
Yeah.
Especially like the first injury that he had, they didn't even really know what was wrong with him.
Yeah, bruised, like a deep bone bruise is what I heard that took forever. And
the but nothing that thumb, showed up on an MRI. Like,
yeah,
they were looking at it saying, we're not seeing anything here. Like, there's no structural damage, no ligament damage. Like, what's happening?
Yeah. So let's say you fire the coach. And the most obvious, if they do that,
do you agree that's the, like, what they have to do something?
I believe, well, it's either you either fire the coach or you acquire a goaltender. It's one of those are the only two options I see.
What was the jersey count last night? I know that's a funny question to ask, but that actually matters. How many jerseys
were thrown away? It was three. I will say this though. Like there,
why is that a thing?
It's the worst thing. I'm just going to say it. Like
it's embarrassing.
You throw a jersey on the ice. Like, give me a, first of all, okay. The first time it happened, maybe you're like, okay, that's different. But now it's like, huh, I'm going to throw a jersey. I can't think of anything unique. And the funny thing is for the fans who get caught, and I was told that there, because two came on right after the goal, the last goal. And those two people got caught and they got escorted out. They're probably banned based on previous. The third one then came on the opposite side of the ice, just as the puck was about to drop. And I was told by fans that no security saw who that person was. So that person 2 minutes later just walked out of the rink like everybody else. So two out of the three, likely based on past history, you throw a jersey, you get caught, they ban you because right on your ticket, it says, you know, there's certain things that you're not supposed to do. Now, it doesn't say throw a jersey, but it does say you're not supposed to throw anything on the ice. So
yeah, but that's four Canadian teams this year where their fans have thrown a jersey on the ice.
Yeah, it's a terrible.
First off, I'd never tell anyone how to act at a game. You paid for the ticket. It's your right to boo. It's your right to be upset with whatever happened. But how dumb do you look? You paid all that money for your ticket, all that money for your jersey, and now you're just going to throw it on the ice? Like, you know, the sad part is teams have actually been reactive to it and have made personnel changes based on optics like that. The Canucks, it was Saturday night against Pittsburgh. Fans were chanting fire Benning and they threw jerseys on the ice. The next day, Jim Benning's gone. The Toronto Maple Leafs back in whatever year it was, you know, chanting about Ron Wilson getting fired, jersey thrown on the ice. He's fired. Teams react to it. The Montreal Canadiens made their GM change this year. The Habs, Leafs, Canucks and Oilers have all had jerseys thrown on the ice this year. Don't know why that's a thing, but it is. And oddly, teams react to it. And so fans probably keep doing it.
Well, like the fact that the Leafs had it is odd to me considering the record.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Like that is the Leafs one makes no sense. Like they're a really good team. Like trust me, Montreal, Edmonton and Vancouver fans wish their team was as good as Toronto right now. So it'll be interesting what happens with Dave Tippett moving forward. No question. The other big news this week, Frank, of course, the schedule came out and they're plugging in the majority of the games in that, that 2 week window. You know, you look at like Ottawa, the Islanders, Edmonton, Calgary, teams who had significant amount of games postponed. They have a really condensed schedule. And then like you really see the difference. Like I see in the Pacific Division right now, Anaheim and San Jose, they've played like six more games than Edmonton and Calgary, actually seven more than Calgary now. And you look, when they come out of the All-Star break, the Sharks have the full week off. the full week of the seventh off because they played fewer games. And meanwhile, you know, the Orders and the Flames are crunching like 8 games in 13 days and stuff
such
like that.
Life.
So the games in hand aren't nearly as beneficial as they normally would for those teams. It's been a benefit if you're a team who's played more games now because you don't have a ridiculous schedule that's like 40 games in 80 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And how about the Ottawa Senators jammed with 11 games in a span where they can have no fans?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Yeah.
Like, they're not happy. They're sitting here going like, well, what are we supposed to do? You rescheduled all these games. Like, I think in an odd way, and the league would never say this, obviously the schedule ends up being the schedule. You know, I'm sure they were trying to accommodate as much as they can, but they're like, the Sens are one of the lowest revenue producing teams in the league anyway. What's the difference? Just play the games. Stop whining.
Yeah. Oh, hey, it's going to be fascinating how that impacts, the bottom line of the league again this year. Now, it is only the 7 markets in Canada. Now, Edmonton's at 50%. Calgary's at 50%. BC's going to see theirs. I saw the date. Ontario gets up to 50% starting in February and then maybe full by the
time. 1 month from today.
Yeah. So it'll be curious how that impacts the escrow, because we all know how much money the players had to pay back, and they were hoping that that would be only over a 2-year window. That might be extending to 3 now.
Yeah, I think it might be extended longer than that. It's not just that these 7 Canadian teams, you know, I know you phrased it that way. It's the 7 Canadian teams, I think, account for more than 40% of the league's total gate revenue. It's the Oilers have some of the highest ticket prices in the league. The Leafs obviously are one of the top revenue generators. The Montreal Canadiens, in a year where they've been, you know, played games without fans at Bell Center, their team is also bad at the same time. There's not even a rush to get back to the game when they finally are allowed to have fans back in again. So it's, this is pretty significant for the NHL in terms of a revenue, you know, flashpoint. And it's actually significant for the on-ice product as well, because they need to get back to $4.8 billion, which is where they were trending towards before the pause in 2019-20, in order for the salary cap to go up $1 million next year to 82.5. I know it doesn't sound like a big difference from 81.5 to 82.5, but for every team, that's one more roster spot.
Oh, it's massive. And, you know, you mentioned Montreal. They got the news. Jake Allen's now out 8 weeks. For the first time ever in franchise history, they've allowed 50 shots in consecutive games. Montembeau was excellent last night. He kept them in the game.
Yeah, it's a shame
until they lost in overtime in Vegas. But, man, they look like they are trending strongly, Frank, to have the best odds to pick number one overall. And hey, the draft is a crapshoot at best. Like, there is the odd time when you get an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid, go back to Crosby and Ovechkin, sure, but, you know, Patrick Kane. But there's a lot of times that the number one isn't clearly the best player. And you look at this year, and, you know, with a lot of those players missing games last year because of COVID and everything like that, like, I'm fascinated by the draft this coming season and how it impacts those teams. You know, Arizona, you know, Arizona's basically whole plan, Frank, has been to build through the draft. And the draft this year, I still think, might be more of a crapshoot than ever.
I agree with you. By the way, it's in Montreal, so it'd be kind of crazy if Montreal ended up getting the first overall pick. What a kind of celebration that would be in Montreal in July. Bob McKenzie had his draft rankings yesterday and went through the whole thing in the show. And Shane Wright is still the consensus number one, but it's open. It's not he's locked it down as we have these last 6 months to go before the draft. It's still up for grabs, and everyone's called it the race for Shane Wright. I don't know that it'll end up being that.
No, not at all. I'm with you wholeheartedly. I think you could easily see some changes atop it. Now,
by the way, I like the, for fans listening, I've really liked the description from Craig Button on the show, and I'd love to get the TSN director of scouting on our pod again to talk. But, you know, the way he framed Shane Wright was a star, but not a superstar, a really good player, but not a generational, not anything like that.
No. And those are hard. Like those, you look at a lot of drafts where, you know, you have really good players, but like McDavid's and Matthews and those guys, you know, obviously Crosby, et cetera. Like those are rare, right? Like look at like Alex Lafreniere's been a good player so far in his young career, but not dominant right away. We'll see if Owen Power will be that guy or not. Rasmus Dahlin, good player, excellent goal last night, by the way. But I think sometimes, you know, the draft is great and you have to build to the draft, but my goodness, you got to get a little bit lucky because you can talk all you want when you're doing your list and every year. And I've talked to guys who do it. When you get to your list and you're, let's say Frank, they're just, okay, here's Frank Saravalli and here's Jason Gregor and here's Tyler Yaremchuk. And all three scouts will have them ranked 1, 2, 3 in a very different order. And it could be like, there's McDavid's are easy. And when you get to the second and the third round, my goodness, it's a real crapshoot. And you look, and I think now more than ever, I've been noticing lately at the draft the last few years, Frank, the amount of picks that it differentiates and you're getting more from later rounds. I think it just illustrates that it's getting harder and harder. And you have to ensure that your scouts are adapting to new things and don't get caught in a, I only like this type player.
This draft actually reminds me a little bit of the Nolan Patrick draft from a few years ago. We spent so many years talking about Nolan Patrick going to be the number one. Obviously, he had injury issues in junior hockey, ends up going number two, Nico Hischier. The two best players in the draft went after them in Makar and Heiskanen. So it does feel a little bit like that there's been so much attention paid to Shane Wright over the last number of years that, you know, what if he ends up not going number one?
Nah. And I'll say this might be the year if your team's in the draft lottery and you don't pick number one, I don't think that that's going to crush you and guarantee that you're going to have, you're missing out on a guaranteed player. I think it's going to come down to organizations and who they like better. And you know, it could be fascinating that you might see some movement at the top of the trade board, which you normally don't see. So
is this a weird question to ask that is that sort of idea that we end up talking about one player for a number of years? Is that a Canadian slant thing? Like, is that because Shane Wright was granted exceptional status because Nolan Patrick was, you know, just so highly sought after, talked about? Like, where does that come from?
Oh, hey, Frank, I think
you rarely hear about it for European players.
I think it's a big North. I'm going to go farther and say it's a North American thing because, and I understand why, you know, you got Canadian people and then you got Americans. And so you look like when Patrick Kane was getting drafted, Austin Matthews, there's a lot of hype about those guys. And I understand it. It's mainly a North American league. But if you go back, like Alex Ovechkin now has been getting a lot of love more than ever. But you go back and you look at the first 10 years of his career and there was way more, he can't do it, you know, and he's not Sidney Crosby. Well, you don't ever hear anybody say Austin Matthews isn't Connor McDavid very often to the level that you do. And I think it's a North American, people might not want to agree, but I think there's definitely a subconscious bias in favor of North American players for a lot.
It has to be. Why else would we spend all this time talking about them?
Yeah. So definitely there. And that's why, hey, looking ahead to the 2023 draft, and I saw both of them at the World Juniors, Michkov and Bedard. Oh, my goodness. And I think it's a legit reason. I think the reason why Michkov won't go as high, even if he's better, is because he's under contract for 3 more years. Right. Yeah. And that is not available to come till 26, which, by the way, might not be the worst thing in the world. I've argued it for years. I've made the arguments. I've written articles. I write them every year because the NHL draft should move back a year. It's the easiest, most simple decision they could make. And it would be much better from a marketing tool. You would have less misses and it would be better for everybody involved. They'll never do it because they had an opportunity last year and they didn't.
Worked out pretty well for Kirill Kaprizov.
Yes. Yeah. Staying over late. Bang on, Frank. Bang on. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk. TY, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic. And I'm here with another edition of Fill in the Blank for our friends over at DoorDash. Ding dong. Use the promo code RUNDOWNDD. Gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. And even if it's not your first order, I mean, come on. Who wants to cook? It's a Friday. Let's go. All right. Jumping into it. First fill in the blank question I got for you. Heard a little bit of talk this week. Actually, you guys hit on it just a couple of minutes ago. The Montreal Canadiens. I want to talk a little about what they could do heading into the trade deadline now that they have a new GM. So your question is, the biggest name that the Montreal Canadiens will move before the deadline is blank. Gregor?
Whew, man, that's, well, Ben Sherratt's the easy answer there, because I think there's lots of the type of defenseman he is, the size of a defenseman he is. He's a pending UFA. So, yeah, I'll take the low hanging fruit. It's the easy one. I think it's Ben Sherratt.
OK, I haven't had a chance to update my story yet, but the player that I believe is most in demand from the Montreal Canadiens is Arturi Lehkonen.
Ooh.
Teams see Arturi Lehkonen as this year's version of Blake Coleman. He does, you know, the scouting report on Arturi Lehkonen is he does just about everything in his game exceptionally well, except finish, which is ironic because he is Finnish. And that's the guy that teams are really after to get.
All right.
I know at least three teams that are begging the Montreal Canadiens to try and get Arturi Lehkonen.
Okay.
He's a pending RFA at the end of this season.
Well, those guys make more sense because you can have them for more than one run, right? Like that's what Coleman and Goudreau did for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah. Next one up, another trade one. Marc-Andre Fleury will be a blank on the day after the trade deadline. Frank, thank you.
Colorado Avalanche.
Ooh.
That's the old, that's okay. So there's been lots of talk about Marc-Andre Fleury. Will he go to the Oilers? Will he go here? Will he go there? This is going to be a curated selection. Marc-Andre Fleury is not going anywhere where he doesn't want to go. I believe, and it's been reported elsewhere, that there's an agreement in place, a gentleman's agreement between the Chicago Blackhawks and Marc-Andre Fleury as part of this idea to have him move his family to Chicago and continue his career. Remember, he was waffling. Should I retire or not? Am I going to play this season? That they weren't going to move him unless he wanted to, being in the final year of his deal. And I think a lot of people have wondered about Pittsburgh. They're fine with Tristan Jarry. I think there's also a sense of like, you know, no offense to Pittsburgh, but been there, done that. Loves it there, loves the guys. I think the place that ultimately, you know, makes a lot of players curious is the Colorado Avalanche.
Ooh, man, Darcy Kemper's turned his game around, but he just got a concussion. I'm going to go with maybe a little bit of a surprise. I'm going to say the Washington Capitals. I'm not sure they're sold on going with two young guys in the postseason. So that would be that's my little bit of a wild card team. There's lots of teams that just that are in the running that doesn't make sense. They've got goaltending that they like. And I'm not saying Washington doesn't like their goaltending, but I think a veteran player as one of their two goalies, I will go with them.
All right. Third one I got for you guys, all three Western Canadian teams, or three of the four Western Canadian teams, I should say, Vancouver excluded, are kind of struggling right now. You got Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg's only got four wins in their last 10, and they lost to Nashville last night. The team you're most confident can snap out of their struggles the quickest is blank. Frank?
Calgary, I think, because they're the most structured team.
Okay.
Yeah, there's too much uncertainty in Edmonton because you don't know who's their coach. Will they get a goaltender soon? I would agree with Frank. Plus, the Flames are playing the Oilers on Saturday, so that might be a benefit for them.
I've been confounded by the Jets all year. Like, I don't know. There's nothing missing on that team. What's their deal?
Well, they've had, you know what, injuries, and now they got another one. Nick Ehlers is out.
It's been brutal, but like, come on. Like, at some point, they're not like they're barely treading water.
And other teams have found a way to win despite injuries as well, right?
Injuries and COVID and everything else. Like, there's been teams that have been rocked just as hard.
Yeah. All right. Fourth one I got for you before we get to our bonus question. Tom Wilson laid one of the best body checks I have seen this season last night in their game against the Boston Bruins. So I want you to give me one word to describe the big hit Tom Wilson laid last night, Jason.
I will say textbook.
I like that.
I will say punishing.
All right.
But I wanted to say unnecessary.
Unnecessary, really? I thought that was great hit.
Okay, so let's walk back Tom Wilson and his history. We all know what his rap sheet looks like.
Yeah.
Why even put yourself in the position?
That's just a good hard body check.
I know he's changed.
Maybe he knows when to pick his spots now.
I don't buy that for one second.
Okay.
I think you see him deliver a hit like that and the thought process that goes into delivering a hit like that. Mm-hmm. What if it's a half second later? It's interference. Is it not?
Yeah, probably.
Textbook, fine. I just don't know why you'd put yourself in the position to feel the need to throw that big of a hit. Maybe it's just that Tom Wilson's bigger and stronger than everyone else and better looking than everyone else. I don't know what it is, but I see that and I just go like, why?
Well, I think because the reason why is Tom Wilson, that's a dimension that makes him valuable. And if he can maintain a physical presence without being a suspendable presence, then he becomes even more valuable to your team. And
teams are scared of Tom Wilson, whether he throws that hit or not.
True. But it's always a good reminder. I think, hey, keep your head up. But the thing that I liked last night, cause nothing bothered. And I get it's Tom Wilson's reputation again.
They didn't overreact.
On that hit alone, everyone's like, well, that's a clean hit. So good, because clean hits shouldn't always lead to fisticuffs. Mm-hmm. I get that Tom Wilson has a pass and everything, but that one is separate. Pass is the past. If Tom Wilson keeps hitting like that moving forward, no one should have an issue. And if anything, it should be encouraged. I had Radko Gudas on my show this week talking about, you know, he's got 40 more hits than any other defenseman in the NHL. Like, it's hard to hit guys in today's game. And he even says, he goes, the game's faster. You know, it's really hard. You got to walk the line. You don't want to get suspended. But if you're a player that can add that element to their game, like that, we talked earlier about the draft, Frank, I think that's what separates a guy. You look, because there's a lot of guys that you don't know how good they're going to be. But if a person has another dimension to their game that can add them, and because something like that hit, that gets your team. Let's say the team's in a funk and they're kind of whatever. You have one hit. It's like a Connor McDavid end-to-end goal. It gets everybody fired up. Well, that Tom Wilson hit gets his team fired up if he can continue to do it cleanly.
I still get the comments from people. Hey, Snowflake, like I love hitting. I love physicality. I just, for a guy that has all the eyeballs on him, I guess I just wonder how necessary it is.
Fair. That's all. All right, your last one, your points bet bonus question. First off, their video they got up with the Trailer Park Boys, I'm still watching it. It's absolutely hilarious what they did there. You got Paul Coffey out there dangling around bubbles. Hilarious stuff from points bet. Anyways, the odds to win the President's Trophy have been updated. Right now, the NHL standings by points percentage, Frank, don't worry. Colorado and Carolina are tied for the top spot. Then it goes Florida, Tampa Bay, and the New York Rangers. The odds, though, you got Colorado at plus 200. And then right behind them, you got Florida at plus 350. You got Tampa at plus 550, Carolina at plus 600, and the Leafs at plus 700. The Rangers are down at 33-1. My question is, if I gave you a free $100 bet based on those odds I rattled off, who would you be betting on to win the President's Trophy, Frank?
Carolina.
All right.
The odds makers hate the Hurricanes. I don't know why. They also... I don't think they love them to win the division either. The odds at least aren't, you know, they're fine, but not as good as they should be. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is the Hurricanes haven't really faltered all year.
Yeah.
They've been a machine. They haven't had these crazy swings of ups and downs, and I don't know. They've just been consistent. I still think Colorado wins it, but if you're asking me to make a bet, make a wager, I won a little bit more than 2-1. So Carolina would be my team.
6-1, chase the juice.
And this is one where if it's free $100, so I'm not technically losing anything because this isn't my own money. Mm-hmm. So I would then go, I'm going all in. I would go on the Rangers at 33-1. Because I'm like, you know what? If I win, it's so much worth it. Where $3,300 compared to 200, even though I know 200 is better than zero, I still like the chance. I'll go Tom Wilson there and go 33-1. Cause yeah, there's a risk of me potentially being suspended and not winning, but there's a big reward for delivering.
Well, delivered by DoorDash. Well done.
Yeah, there you go. Delivered by DoorDash. That's another edition of Fill in the Blank. See you guys.
So here's my thing on the Rangers though. Like, they've been there in points percentage all year in the sevens, it feels like. Why are they 33-1? Like, what does Vegas know that we don't? That's what I always ask myself. Yeah. What does Vegas know that I don't?
That's totally valid, man. The thing about the Rangers that intrigues me is look at the amount of cap space they have compared to all the other top teams. And I like the Rangers are poised to be the team. If there is a player that financially, like they can, other teams might, well, geez, you're going to have to keep half. We'll have to give you an extra pick or something like that, whatever. But, you know, the Rangers have the opportunity. They could make multiple deals if they wanted to, because they're one of the few teams that has any legit cap space.
I think they will make multiple deals.
Yeah.
That, and they also have a lot of tradable assets.
Yeah. And they got Shesterkin, Frank.
They've got their picks. They've got young players. They've got prospects. They've got a backup goalie that could, that a lot of teams view as a starter. Like, they've also got dead cap money that's coming off the books this year. Like, they're going to have even more cap space in the summer.
Yes. Yeah, no, they're shaping up quite well.
Hey, Jeff Gorton, you did pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're going to, now Adam Fox is up though, so that he's going to take a big chunk.
They already re-signed him.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. Sorry.
He's already, but
it kicks in, right? And it takes up a significant money, does it not?
Yeah, it takes up 9.5, yeah. I believe.
Okay, there. Yeah. So,
yeah, he signed 9.5 times 7. Yeah. So, but still, when you look at their cap commitment for next season, they've got $68 million committed with Fox already signed. 68 out of 82.5. The guys that are UFA are Strome, which is important.
Yes.
Georgiev is an RFA. And then everyone else is kind of, you know, not going to require a huge ticket. Capo Caco is an RFA. Julian Gauthier is an RFA. He's not going to be expensive. Libor Hayek, not expensive. Greg McKegg and Kevin Rooney are their UFAs. They're, you know, plug and play players. I mean, they're in a fantastic position. They've got all of their draft picks except for a third, but they have 2 seconds and 2 fourths. And as I mentioned, the dead cap money, 4.5 is this year's dead cap money. Next year's 3.5. And then there's none after that. So it drops 1 million.
Yeah, Georgiev is the, when you look at a young goalie that a lot of people are high on, talk to Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine, lots of the goalie guys are quite high in him. I like, that's a perfect trade piece, Frank. Like, you look and say, hey, we can get a good backup, but we don't need, like, Shesterkin, I think, has proven he's a legit starter. I don't think there's much doubt about that. So do you
and he signed to an awesome contract.
Yes. So you could move Georgiev and get some legitimate pieces back to help you. I don't think there's any question. I think now honestly, Frank, I would be willing to do that at the deadline if I'm the Rangers, as long as I'm getting a good serviceable backup, right? I don't need a legit young guy to be my backup.
But if I'm the Oilers, that's the guy I'd want.
Well, 100%. But what does Edmonton have? That's the, like, you look at what does Edmonton have that the Rangers will want? Right. That's the challenge. Like, I guess, yes, a Puljujarvi maybe, but, you know, Evan Bouchard and Edmonton's not really in a position to trade him. The other guys that Edmonton's best tradable pieces are all young. The Rangers are entering win now. They're going to want veterans, guys who are proven. So I'm not sure, because trust me, I've looked at it and I don't.
Would you trade the Oilers first round pick for Georgiev? Not saying the Rangers want that, but would you?
Yeah, I would. Yes. 100%.
I think you would have to, because he's young and he can be your goalie of the future. Like, that's the other part of the Oilers equation. It's not just that they don't have anyone now. Do you, like, how certain are you that Skinner is going to be the number one later?
Yeah. I honestly, goaltending for me, Frank, I've given up on trying to predict goaltenders. It's too difficult. They're voodoo. Some that you think look great. And then Binnington comes out of nowhere. Like, it's, there are some obvious ones like Carey Price from a young age and Marc-Andre Fleury, sure. But, you know, and Vasilevsky was a top ranked pick. But, you know, even Kosa and Wallstedt last year, people are like, well, they're going to be the best goalies. I'm like, are you sure? Like, are you really sure? I can't say that with certainty. Goalies are just,
I mean, look at all the other bumbled first round picks, like forwards and defensemen. Like, why? Like, at least goalie's the most important position on the ice.
Yeah. it so is. And last night I saw it, and I think sometimes, like, and if Edmonton does change their coach, which I think is very possible, it doesn't change the fact that now you might get a bump, but does that mean your goalie's magically going to make more saves? Like, Mikko Koskinen is what he is. And when I saw Bobrovsky last night, he's a legit starter who can steal you games. Right. And sometimes steal you periods, because when you say 6-0, people are going to say, well, he didn't win in the game. I'm like, but he did in the first period because he kept it 0-0. You're not playing from behind. Then you get a power play goal. Like, that is such an advantage. And when you don't have it, right, like you look at Demko in Vancouver, right? Like, everyone's like, yeah, Bruce Boudreau. Look at Demko's numbers, man. They're unreal.
Yeah.
Like, unreal. That's why they're winning a lot. Sure, the coaching change helps, and he's made some moves, and it helps that Elias Pettersson. Like, Vancouver was the perfect spot for a coaching change to work because their best players weren't their best players or playing up to their potential. And now they are. I know McDavid's gone pointless in three games, but him and Draisaitl are still top four in league scoring. How much better can your best players be? That's the challenge of whoever takes over Edmonton. They got to get better defensively and goaltending, and it's hard to get better goaltending unless Mike Smith gets healthy. That's their only hope, I think, right now. And that's a hope and a prayer right now.
Which is, again, I guess, bringing it back to the coaching change, or if there's going to be one, like, does that make it harder or easier to make one?
Well,
it's almost like that's the one thing you can change immediately. You could also trade for a goalie, but I think they've sized up the market and no one's really getting them excited.
Like, if we go back and that's why I mentioned, like, Ken Holland ultimately is the one who didn't get the goaltenders. At the end of the day, we can say that Dave Tippett had some insight on Mike Smith originally, but last summer, clearly they were looking elsewhere first. It didn't work out.
Right.
So if you're the GM in your mind, you're like, yeah. So if I fire the coach, I'm firing him for something that I was unable to do. And I wonder if that leads to hesitation to say, I owe it to him to get a goalie first. I wonder if that's part of his thinking.
Could be. We'll see.
Yeah. So, Frank, glad to see you're doing better. Hopefully there will be no repeat performance of yesterday, and you're off of your bass through the worst times. And once again, people, Frank loves it. So be sure to tweet him at Frank Saravalli your suggestions on how to beat COVID. He's very much looking forward to read those.
So. Yeah, I'll take whatever you got.
Frank, have a great weekend. Also, coming up on Monday's pod, the head coach of the women's hockey team for Team USA. They're defending the gold medal at the Olympics. They got lots of veterans coming back. Hillary Knight's going for a fourth time. Joel Johnson will join us on Monday's pod. I'm looking forward to that. Let's be honest, Frank. We all know who's going to, well, the gold medal game. It's going to be Canada and US in women's hockey. It's been electric for decades. And I'm really curious to hear how it's going to go and what the preparation is now. It's a little bit different, I think, when you're the defending champ.
Yeah, no question about that. We'll see. It's women's hockey is going to be the most watched hockey at Beijing.
For sure. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.